The Australian Fitness Podcast is for anyone interested in understanding fitness, training, health, wellness, nutrition, and all things about health optimization. I interview experts from many different backgrounds, skill sets, and career paths. This is a podcast which provides valuable insight for anyone wanting to know more about optimizing their health and learning from those that have dedicated their careers and sometimes their lives doing so. Australian Fitness Podcast, episode 67. Mark Devine is an entrepreneur, New York Times best-selling author, philanthropist, and one of the world's top leadership and coaching experts. After a successful 20-year career as a Navy SEAL and SEAL commander, Mark was hired by the Navy to create a nationwide coaching and leadership program for the SEALs. The bold goal of this program was to give the SEALs the best leadership and mental management tools in the world, to help them forge unbeatable SEAL teams that achieve mission success in the most stressful, challenging environments on Earth. Devine's leadership and coaching program for the SEALs was so effective that it is now being used outside of the Navy by top CEOs, Fortune 100 companies, the USA Olympic team, elite universities, major league sports franchises, celebrities, and other successful individuals from all over the world. So when I had a chance to work with Mark on the podcast and get him on the show, naturally I jumped at that, and it was an outstanding episode, full of insight, full of valuable introspective thinking, and full of lessons and learnings from many, many years at the coalface of incredibly stressful and high-performance environments. In fact, in the SEALs, obviously it's a life and death situation, literally. So this was a great episode, one of the best podcasts I've done. Would love to get Mark back on the show again at some point, but clearly he's a very busy man and in high demand. But it was very humbling to have someone of such worth and caliber on the show. So thanks to Mark and his team for getting him on the show and being a part of the Australian Fitness Podcast, and I hope you really enjoy this episode. So the Australian Fitness Podcast is heading back overseas. We were talking to someone in Melbourne yesterday. We're now back over in the US. We're talking to Mark Devine, who's based in San Diego. What a beautiful city. I've been there once. We were just chatting about it. It's a lovely part of the US, and Mark's based there. But I'll just give you a quick background before I bring Mark in. Mark is a unique individual. We'll explore that in a moment. But historically, he's probably had a couple of different careers, one being in the military as a Navy SEAL, one also being as a certified practicing accountant. So he's got a Bachelor of Economics. He's obviously experienced a great deal in the military. He's got a black belt in two different styles of karate. I'm going to confirm that in a minute, but that's my understanding. He's also a certified yoga teacher. So this is a guy with a unique background in life, and therefore I'm pretty sure we're going to find out a unique perspective in life, and I'm going to bring him in on the show. Mark Devine, good morning and welcome. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Russell. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. What a diverse background. Now, I have listened to a couple of podcasts involving you, and I'll get you to clarify a few things, but my understanding is that your initial career was in economics and accounting. You were you called yourself a bean counter.
That is accurate. Yeah. So after that college experience where I got that economics degree, I took a job with a company called Coopers & Lybrand, which is now PricewaterhouseCoopers. You have it down there in Australia. It's a global accounting and consultancy. And I also went to NYU Stern School of Business, got my master's degree in business administration. So first 4 years of my professional life, I was a bean counter and consultant, you know, so about 2 years auditing and 2 years doing, you know, special project work. And received my MBA and what, you know, in the US, we call the Certified Public Accountancy Certificate, which is a pain in the ass, by the way, to get.
Yeah.
Anyways, I blasted out of there after achieving those degrees and became a Navy SEAL. And the story of why that happened is obviously a little bit more involved than just, you know, waking up one day and joining the SEALs.
Of course. No, well, give us the sort of background there, Mark, where you don't just wake up one day and, as you say, decide to leave the desk and go pick up a weapon. So what was the impetus? What was the change, the drastic change in career direction there? What was that down to?
Well, Well, you mentioned that I had a couple of black belts. So that I would say the introduction of a valid mental development program through a martial arts where the founder grandmaster was also a Zen master. Mm. So, you know, and how I got involved in that, there's a couple angles to that. One is I was, like a lot of your listeners, I was a competitive athlete in my youth and high school and college. You know, I swam competitively. I did, 12 varsity letters in my high school. So I was going to do that in college. So college, I got recruited to swim competitively. I also rode crew. And so that was a big part of my life. When I went down to Manhattan after graduation, this is in the 80s. So it's, we didn't have as, first of all, we didn't have the Australian walkabout mindset. You know, our thing was like, get out of, you graduate from college, you go to work right away or to business school or law school or whatever. So I kind of followed that mindset. And, but when I got to Manhattan, I wasn't willing to let my body kind of go into that decline that I saw everybody else do, where they just were too busy to train or to work out.
Yeah.
So I set myself on this course of, training every morning through, runs, instead of going to that, high carb lunch, with everyone else on my team, I would go to the gym and bang out, an early version of like CrossFit functional workout before CrossFit. And then I was going to school at night at around 7 o'clock. And because it was a partnership between my company and NYU, they let us off at 5, so we had time to go get something to eat or whatever. Well, I looked at that as like a 2-hour training block.
Yeah. Yep.
you got to be smiling because now I'm doing 3 training sessions a day and I'm working full time and I'm going to school full time at night, or part time mostly. So I was thinking, what could I do in that training block? And so the second vector is I remember my freshman roommate at college. His name is Dave. And Dave was kind of a jerk freshman year, right? Like he just really liked to mess with people, and he was a nice guy, but he was arrogant. Mm. I did my competitive swimming. Dave got into Shotokan karate. There was a 4th-degree Dan black belt who taught at Colgate where I went to school. And so over the course of the 4 years that I was at school, Dave became a black belt and he changed. And then after we graduated, he went off to Japan to continue his studies and to teach English. And I remembered Dave, there's something that was different about Dave. He transformed. He was a very different person 4 years after I lived with him that freshman year. I was 4 years older and I'd swum for 4 years, but I wasn't a different person. Mm. I was just 4 years older. And so it intrigued me. I was like, what was it about that training? And I wanted to learn more. So I found a martial arts studio in New York. I was very lucky. I literally stumbled upon it, synchronicity when the student's ready, the teacher appears kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Nakamura, the founder of this school, became my teacher, but he was a Zen master, like I mentioned. And so he had a Zen training program that ran concurrent with the karate. So I started, and a very small number of students did the Zen, where he had thousands of students doing the karate. It's a huge school. And he had hundreds of thousands of students worldwide. Seido, S-E-I-D-O, karate.
Right.
Amazing, amazing program. So I started studying Zen with a bunch of black belts on Thursday nights for an hour. And we would go to the Zen Mountain Monastery up in Woodstock, New York for these 4-day long weekends where we'd balance karate training with time in nature and Zen with the monks. And I started a daily practice, which I run to this day, of meditation. And during the 4 years that I was in New York, being a CPA, MBA, all that kind of like getting ready to climb the corporate ladder, following the drumbeat of the common, Western lifestyle, I was also sitting on that little meditation bench, and it literally radically changed my brain and my mind, my perception of reality, and my sense of self, including what I was meant to be doing in the world. And I became very clear to me that at least at that point in my life, I did not belong on the corporate, gerbil wheel.
Yeah.
I was meant to do something different. I was meant to put this athletic body to work, but I wasn't going to be like a professional athlete. I was going to be a warrior athlete, And so I got this sense that I was meant to be a warrior. Didn't really know anything about the SEALs, but then the second, kind of synchronicity was I stumbled upon a Navy recruiting office and I saw this poster that had pictures of Navy SEALs doing really cool shit. Yeah. And it didn't say anything about the SEALs. It just said, be someone special. And that just absolutely captivated me. I mean, I remember like for about a half an hour, I just stared at that picture and I was like, whoa, you know, like I could see myself there. And so the rest of the story is just the details of how I got in. But I literally, November of 1989, I walked away from my MBA CPA and a, you know, what probably today would be about $120,000 to $150,000 job. And I joined the Navy. I also got my black belt that same month. So same month, November of 89, MBA, CPA, first degree black belt. And I went to Officer Cannon School. And then I went to SEAL training, you know, the next spring.
Wow. It seems to me from just the first few minutes that you've been speaking to me that you have a very strong awareness of the connection between mind and body. And clearly some of that work that you did, that meditation and that Zen mastery that you did, it seems to me that you probably became a little bit more in touch with your internal thinking, your internal dialogue, your intuition. Is that a fair comment? Is that something that you found you experienced, that you just calmed the noise that no doubt you were experiencing from that corporate, you know, ladder, the buzz of corporate, and you sort of just, you had clarity. That's what I'm trying to say. You had clarity. Is that a fair comment?
I certainly gained a lot of clarity over the stories I was telling myself, and then that opened the space for me to kind of create a new story. So definitely, and that's kind of like, you know, 101 basic training, you know, for anyone to start taking control of their life is like, take a look at the stories you're telling yourself or you've been fed, recognize what's good and what's bullshit, and then shit can the bullshit and bring in more of the good. It's not easy to do though, as you're aware, right? And so there's a lot of aspects of the way our brains and our minds and even our bodies are trained that really cuts us off from that level of clarity and or internal wisdom, which you might call intuition. And so it takes a long time to recondition your mind to be able to, you know, separate from the thoughts and the emotions and to stop identifying with, you know, what I would call that egoic personality aspect of our beings, and also stop identifying as solely this body, right? And so then what happens, you first create this metacognitive split. That's what I did. And it's a good split. It's not like a, you know, psychiatric split, but this metacognitive split where you, part of your brain goes online and it, you know, it has to do with right hemispheric thinking, where you become aware of that thinking, that contextualized thinking, which is almost like an observer. And so what happened with me on the bench is that that part of my brain came online and I was able to simultaneously observe the quality and the directionality or the attention of my rational left brain thinking mind. And so the simultaneous nature of being able to observe and watch while also being able to think then gives you great control. And so early on, you kind of shift back and forth. Like in meditation, you start to go into that contextual awareness, and we call that, you know, mindfulness, or, you know, touching the void, because sometimes you can actually drop off into kind of pure awareness. But then we kind of snap back into thinking mode. Yeah. And so and this is why just a little bit of meditation doesn't, you know, it's good for you, maybe has some stress benefits, but it's not going to change you. What changes you is doing it, practicing every day, to where suddenly your ego kind of recognizes that, okay, you know, it's not the only game in town, and you spend more and more time in this contextual awareness. And then until that becomes a permanent online state, in a spiritual tradition, we call that awakened awareness. And when that goes online permanently, then you live from that perspective and you're able to take control over the quality of your thoughts and where you're putting your attention. And that's when you can completely change the stories that you've been told, because you recognize them for what they are, whether it's subconscious programming or conscious or mental models or belief systems or whatever structures, you know, that you've kind of taken on to help make sense of reality. You begin to kind of penetrate those and recognize them for what they are. You know,
you've written a book called Unbeatable Mind. You've also got a podcast called Unbeatable Mind. So clearly your ability to control your thoughts and your thinking and your brain and the noise is something that you're expert at. I want to ask you, talk to me a little bit about what you've been doing with your business and how you've used all of those skills that you've developed over many, many years, 30 plus years. Has there been a large call for you and your advice, your guidance, your skills in the last 2 years or 18 months to 2 years, given what the world has gone through? Because I can imagine that your ability to help people learn how to manage their mind has been something that would be very valuable given the times that we've been through. Is that something that you've found with your own business, your own work, your own demand?
Definitely, the need is there. You're right. And we're seeing that with our clients. Having said that, you know, it's difficult to get through the noise of at least American culture. Like there's just massive amount of noise and distraction and people making claims about, you know, this and that and the other thing. And so, it's not necessarily accurate for me to say that we've seen a huge uptick in our business because we really need to learn how to get through the noise and to, you know, bring our authentic type of what I call unbeatable mind training to the, you know, to the population. So we're working on that and we're, you know, kind of, you know, my business started out training special operators, Navy SEALs, even a lot of Australians and Canadians and UK, SAS, SBS, CDC, whatnot, alphabet soup of special operators. And so I became really adept at developing, you know, pre-resiliency, focus, calm, control, you know, all the benefits that accrue to an elite operator. Like Navy SEALs who train with me generally get through SEAL training at a 90% success rate. You know, as you know, probably heard the general fail rate is like the opposite, 90%, 85 to 90%.
Well, you're trying to find the elite of the elite. So naturally there's going to be a high dropout rate, isn't there?
Yeah, for sure. Right. And we can take those elite and make sure they're successful. And so when I train, I kind of shifted to training, you know, kind of like corporate athletes and businesses, a lot of that energy kind of for many years trailed me. And so I was getting people who were already really fit, getting people going good to great. People already had kind of good skills, right? And so now I recognize, you know, even though some people struggled, most of those people actually, and probably a lot of your audience, did fairly well during COVID. You know what I mean? We know how to boost our immune systems. We know how to stay calm. We actually, our exercise regimen in and of itself with the mental training that we do, you know, we are the thrivers during crisis. And so I've kind of like, my mission over the past 2 years really broadened to like, I want to help people who don't have what you and I have and what your listeners have, right? Haven't grown up in sports and athletics and with good coaches, right? I want to bring this training to 100 million people who may not be, you know, exceptional already in terms of the, you know, they're exceptional humans, but they may not have exceptional skills. So we're going through a complete transformation of how I kind of position what I do and how the language we use so that we can reach a broader audience. Cause I think my sense is that, you know, if we're going to see a more peaceful, prosperous and compassionate world, it's going to have to be done by individuals at scale. You know, our institutions have failed us. I'm okay with a few corporations and large, you know, if corporations can catch up and be and run with empathy, great. I'm still skeptical about that. I think it's going to be 100 million, then a billion individuals acting, thinking, and collaborating from the spirit, from a place of love, of connectedness, from, you know, care and compassion, right? And I call that the world-centric leader, the world-centric warrior. And so that's my mission is to take what I was training as warriors to go be better on the battlefield to training kind of like a global population of warriors of the light, you know, warriors who can bring positive energy to the world, well, you know? And I think you and a lot of your listeners are like, yeah, and we're part of that, right? So it's not like me alone. There's going to be a team of teams and tribes of tribes all working together to fulfill this vision. Because we don't want the vision that we're being fed by the mainstream media and our politicians. It's fucked up. You know what I mean? We want the earth to be healthy and whole. It's not going to happen through carbon credits. We want people to be working in harmony, not separated by fear and division and violence. And so it's us. You know, Gandhi said, be the change you want to see in the world. Well, we got to have a billion people feeling that and believing that, you know. Well, I just went off on a little tangent there, but that's You gave me the opportunity to tell you where I'm going. That's where I'm going.
No. I wanted that. That's amazing. That, well, look, what you've just said, what you've articulated is what I feel many thousands of people, hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of people are feeling around
totally
the world.
Agree.
But they just need a voice, Mark, don't they? They just need a voice. They need a platform. But it's growing. There's no doubt. It's growing. There's a real swell of I don't know what you would call it, but yeah, you're right. People are searching for more than what we've been told or what we're being provided with. There's no doubt about that. So I totally agree with what you're saying. I want to ask you too. In the last few years, maybe 5 years, one of the catchphrases, one of the keywords that gets thrown around and I believe overused in many instances and underemphasized. So people throw this word out called resilience. Mm-hmm. And whilst I understand what it means and whilst I understand the importance of it, I'm not sure whether many people that actually need to be more resilient actually fully understand what true resilience is. Now, given your background in military, your extensive background in military, one of the key attributes of anyone who operates in that field is resilience, because there is just no hiding in the environment that you operate in. Mm-hmm. How do you define resilience? What do you believe true resilience looks like? And why do you believe, well, do you think, because I do you think that as a population, we lack the resilience that we once used to have as a species? Broad question, I know, but it's around the word of resilience.
Yeah, no. So resilience to me is the ability to adapt very quickly in a positive way to change and to crisis, you know, or to challenge, right? And so a body that is very resilient, you know, you would say has a strong immune system, and the immune system can adapt and come back into balance very quickly and get stronger as a result of the stressors placed on it. So a human being has both physical and physiological, mental and psychological resilience when their whole being can adapt and respond positively to the stresses that are placed upon it. And of course, you know, the rapidity of bounce back is going to depend upon the severity of the crisis. Right. So, you know, you have a severe crisis like, you know, COVID, which for most of us, you know, most of us affected us kind of economically and psychologically as opposed to physically, although there are those whose immune system were immunocompromised or they had, you know, comorbidity issues that were, you know, impacted horribly by this new kind of virus, whether it was manufactured or natural, released by the Chinese military or escaped from the lab. We don't care.
Yeah.
It still hit and went across the globe. So a resilient response to that would be an individual who's prepared their body and mind through previous prehabilitation, let's just say, by exposing themselves to challenge. Mm-hmm. And that could be exposing yourself to challenge through fitness, through challenging physical and mental training, like our SEAL Fit training or special ops training, through proper, you know, nutrition and sleep and those type of hygienic things. And so when the next big challenge hits, it's like, okay, you know, immediately the body mind system clicks into warrior mode. And it's not going to be thrown way out of whack. You know, it's going to be able to respond fairly quickly, and it's going to come back, and it's going to find new solutions, and it's going to adapt.
Yep.
I mean, that's resiliency ultimately.
Yep.
Now, most people think, you know, I use the in my SEAL training, you know, because, you know, Navy SEALs, young Navy SEALs, you know, you got to use a sledgehammer somehow to get through their thick skulls. So I use metaphors, you know, and I use the metaphor of the mighty oak and the reed. And I said, if a tsunami comes by and washes, you know, over the land like Fukushima, would you rather be the mighty oak who does nothing but strength training? And you think you're this big badass MF-er, right? All yoked. Yep. Or would you rather be the reed who's flexible because you do yoga every day and you breathe and you meditate? And, you know, which one would you rather be when the tsunami hits? And they're all like, yeah, I'd rather be the reed because the tsunami just roll over it and then it'll pop back up. So, yeah. So this is sort of like the yin and the yang. We bring it to how we bring that idea to resiliency. Resilient people are strong. And like Ripito said, they are hard to kill because they do strength training, but they're also soft and they're harder to kill because they do meditation and breath work and yoga. And so it's that combination, that yin and yang, and being able to ride the edge between them and always keep them in balance. Always remember that if you're too hard, you're going to get blown over the light, like the oak. And if you're too soft, you're not going to be taken seriously, or, you know, you are, you're compromising yourself because you won't have the strength, you know, the physical strength. So the mind can be trained the same way. The body can be trained the same way. It's this balance between action and inaction, or doing things and then just sitting and receiving intuition and wisdom and insight. So resiliency, you know, then you kind of took it to the cultural level. Are we less resilient? Well, we're getting used to rapid change. Mm. And so you could say in that regard that humans are being forced to be more resilient because we're having to adapt to this change very quickly. And we're recognizing that because of the failure of the Western medical system, that we need to kind of take control of our own bodies and our own health. We need to eat healthier. We need to, you know, drink lots of water and, you know, and take the right supplements and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, get the right sleep. And so I would suggest that the soft underbelly, or the people who aren't out there screaming on social media, and the people that aren't, you know, we're not writing articles about, we're actually much more resilient than, you know, let's say our parents' generation.
Yep.
And that, like you said, is spreading, and that's going to reach a tipping point. You know, at first it was just a few, you know, thousand people, and then it's tens of thousands, then it's 100,000, then it's a million, then it's 10 million. Then all of a sudden, you know, you hit that exponential growth curve.
Yep.
And all of a sudden you have a billion people who are really on board with what we're talking about. And, the world will be extraordinarily resilient at that point.
Yeah.
Now, what's going to happen to everyone else who's kind of like sucked into the negativity and the fear, and who, you know, really got, you know, rigid cultures or rigid systems, they're going to suffer. Mm-hmm. But around them, the Garden of Eden will grow back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people like you and I and your audience, we're going to thrive. Mm.
I spoke to a gentleman yesterday on the podcast, and he's got a background similar to yours, a strong background and experience in physical preparation. He was a strength and conditioning coach, but then once he finished that part of his career, he turned his attention more to business, and he's had a very successful business career. And it just seems that more so than ever, Mark, we, As humans, we need to, as you just said, we need to make sure that we're well-rounded, because the world's really challenging now. When you look at all the technology that we have available to our disposal to operate with, but we also have a very complex human population now. And we're able to reach out and interact with people more so than ever. Sometimes that's a good thing, sometimes that's not. But it seems now more than ever, and this is probably where you come into your own, people need to be really adapted physically, but also mentally. We need to have a number of different skill sets. We need to take more, I guess, responsibility for ourselves and the management of ourselves. You know, people like you are leaders in that space. With your program Seal Fit, how does... Because I'll be honest, I have not looked at this in detail, and I haven't done the program, so I'm a little ignorant in that respect. But how does the Seal Fit program relate to Mr. or Mrs. Smith, the general population person? Talk to me about that, and how you've applied that so that anyone can do that program and benefit from it. When people think SEALs, even people that aren't in the military, when you say Navy SEAL, most people think, oh, that's extreme stuff. They're extreme warriors. So how does that work for me, the normal human being?
Sure. First off, your comment about, you know, needing to be good in a lot of different things can, there's another way to recontextualize that, right? So the Western world likes to segment and break down everything into a gnat's ass. And so that can be very confusing to people. Because now, oh, we have to be experts in supplementation and in ketogenesis and, you know, paleo and, you know, blah, 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 hydration, you know. And then, and so you think you have to become an expert. You reach out to experts in all these different areas and it gets very confusing. It's overwhelming.
Yeah.
And I like to go in the other direction. I like to simplify. You know, when the Navy SEALs, we say, keep it simple, stupid. And so for me, and what I taught beginning through SEALFIT was, you know, a radical process of simplifying your life. And that is to train yourself as a whole person, as a whole being. Don't separate yourself into a body, right? Don't separate yourself into body and put your emotions over there and put your spirit over there and put your mind over there and think that, oh yeah, I'm just going to leave my body behind and go train my mind now. And then I'm going to leave my mind behind, go to church on Sunday and train my spirit. Mm. No. It's all, you're all one.
Yes.
So SEALFIT and now Unbeatable Mind, you see that little, if you're watching the video, I have that sign behind me.
Yeah.
It's a program of integration, or for most people, reintegration. And so we end up training everything simultaneously in a training plan we call a five mountain training plan. And the five mountains is a metaphor, but it's the way we look at kind of the human being, that we have this physical, mental, emotional, intuitive, and spiritual aspect to us. And so we train them all together. So if you're doing a workout, you're training all five, mm-hmm. right? If you're doing your morning ritual, you're training all five. Now you might have an emphasis on one over the other, or two or three. So for instance, if you're doing a hardcore strength workout, you're going to be emphasizing the physical and the mental. But when you integrate the breath and your why or your purpose into it and your connection to God into it, that suddenly becomes, you know, there's four mountains there.
Yeah.
And then of course, because you're, you know, a competent, experienced strength trainer or coach is very present and mindful and attention, you know, attentive to like the most discrete detail in their list because of the risk involved, there's an intuitive aspect in it as well. As you can, you know, you can tell as you're setting up for a deadlift and you're pressing into the ground and, you know, your structure's coming into alignment. You can tell if it's going to be a good lift or if there's something structurally, you know, not quite right. And the competent coach or trainee will back off.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, and you're paying attention to that, you're bringing your intuition into it. So we have our trainer, whether it's an athlete at SEALFIT or whether it's a coaching client, executive client at Unbeatable Mind, we have them develop this plan and begin to train this way where you're training everything simultaneously. You're training your whole being in this process of reintegration, and magic happens with us because it really, really unlocks a lot of untapped potential that you really hide from yourself because you separate aspects of your being the way we're taught in the Western world. Mm. So that's kind of the first thing I want to say about it. The second thing is this, you know, early on, I had civilians, like you said, every day, Jack and James, they say, I love what you're teaching at SEALFIT. It completely resonates with me, but I'm not really into the military thing. And I really don't think I can handle your 50-hour, you know, hell week type event anyways. So I heard that and I wanted more people to experience what I teach, this idea of reintegration and training, five mountain training. So I literally spun out a company called Unbeatable. Unbeatable Mind is the main program. So that's the one for Tom, Dick, and Harry to come to, and it's not a physical training program. Yep. It's through coaching, right? And so we engage with us in a process to learn the skills and you get coached, and we put people in small peer groups so that they have that team and accountability, and it can be done virtually. It is done virtually, you know, unless you want to come to our annual kind of gathering event. Mm. And the program is every bit as extraordinarily powerful as SEALFIT, which is leading with the hardcore physical daily training, as well as these events that we call crucibles. So if you're an athlete listening and a warrior athlete and you want to get busy and dirty, and we have tons of Australians have come to our SEALFIT events, tons, but you got to make the trek over to America. It's going to cost you a lot of money. It's totally worth it because it's a life transforming event.
Yeah.
But Unbeatable Mind is where we can affect, you know, millions of people.
Yeah.
Through our Unbeatable Mind programs.
Wow. You're right. I mean, we have to, you're absolutely right. We have to get more in touch with the holistic development of ourselves, because humans, yeah, you're right. I don't know whether it's the environment that we live in, but we do find, you know, I do find that people categorize too much and they don't look at the holistic picture, and they focus too much on one element. So therefore, there's a little bit of imbalance and so forth. But
that's right.
I think that's spot on. I have a saying that I use myself, and that is, and I think it'll resonate with the way you approach things, and that is, identify. So when you're trying to change something, we identify what it is that we're trying to change about ourselves or about our situation, whatever. We then simplify. So we hone in on the specific elements that need to be changed, and we try and block out the noise. And then we amplify. So identify, simplify, amplify. So the amplify is we need to turn up our effort, our attention. We need to focus on what we're trying to change, and we need to put effort and energy and consistency into that. And I think identify, simplify, amplify is something that works for me. Are we distracted by the noise? And how do you teach or coach people to identify, simplify, amplify, or something, or your version of that? What are the key things that in order for us to get better physically, change something about ourselves physically, what's your approach to that? If I'm one of your clients, you say to me, well, look, Russell, this is my advice. You want to lose 50 kilos. You want to change your physicality. You want to change your life. Here's a step-by-step approach. Walk me through that.
Yeah, I love that model. Identify, simplify, amplify. I would say, you know, when I work with a client, we ask them, you know, yes, they've got these physical or objective things that they come to us. Because, you know, again, we're really taught to look outside. And then when you're looking in the mirror, technically you're looking outside. And so you say, okay, well, I've got this weight. I want to lose weight. Or I'm feeling a little burnout, so I want to be able to perform in my job or in my athletic endeavor more at a peak state. And so where I start is not from the objective, but the subjective. And so that's kind of like your identify. But so subjective, I start out more by asking them, what's, you know, why? Like, what is it that you're really trying to accomplish here? Are you just trying to lose weight to look good in a bathing suit for the summer? Or are you... Does your self-concept have, you know, can you see yourself being an ideal weight forever and never have to worry about weight again? And what I find is a lot of people who, you know, go through these roller coasters and weight, they don't have that self-concept. Mm-hmm. And can they lose the weight for the summer? Yeah, but then they put it back on again in the winter. Or whatever, you know, after their race, that, you know, or event, they peak and then, you know, then they binge. It's very common. You know, we have this kind of a, you know, boom or bust addictive, you know, personalities here in the West, and very a lot of people listening were like, yeah, I get that. So I have people kind of start a practice with, it starts with breathing. I call it box breathing. It's way more than just breathing though. Box breathing is kind of like the Trojan horse to begin a practice of concentration and then mindful awareness and then visualization. And then we bring in this idea of really kind of discover your purpose, passion, and principles. We call it your three P's. So you can really get a good sense of who you are and who you want to be in the future. Like, who is the ideal version of Russell that's aching to come out? And what's holding you back that doesn't believe that? So we identify the image of the desired end state. And it can be 10, 20, 30 years in the future, but it doesn't have to be, because it can happen really fast when everything lines up. And also we begin to work on, oh, there's some image, there's, I have some limiting things holding me back from that, right? So that's kind of, for me, is the identity part, is not identify that I want to lose weight. Identify the gap between who I know I can be or who I think I can be in the future or who I desire to be and who I am right now. And so I'm also, you know, this is also pointing to this fact that this is an integrated, you know, process. So now if that gap of where I am right now has aspects to it that are beyond the physical. One manifestation of it is the weight I'm carrying. Another manifestation is the dialogue. And you said this earlier, the dialogue, you know, the story I tell myself.
Yeah.
Another manifestation is the subconscious, you know, systems or structures that, were heretofore hidden from view, but, you know, we're going to work on exposing those. And those are, you know, what you would call shadow or, you know, the hidden biases. You know, I work with a client who lost like 200 pounds through working with me, but he was still, you know, 225, a big man, but he still acted like a fat man. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like he'd do a burpee, and he did a burpee like he was 400 pounds. He'd go down really slow and step back. And I'm like, dude, you're now like this 225 pound fire breathing machine. So why are you acting like a fat man? And it's because he still saw himself as fat in his mind's eye. You know, he didn't believe that he was this 225 pound fire breathing dragon. So if he stopped training, he would go right back to that old weight.
Yep.
And so we really had to go then work on that self-concept, that subconscious programming that, you know, was ingrained in him at a very early age that said that I'm overweight.
Yeah.
Even if I lose weight, I'm overweight person. And so it's, it really tends to be much more work on the internal. Cause you know, I say wherever the mind leads, the body follows. And you can take hardcore training and use the body to bring the mind along and to train it. And that's very appropriate way to do it. But you can't get to the subconscious programming and these hidden belief systems through physical training alone, in my opinion. It's just impossible. You need a deep practice of introspection, of reflection, of imagery work, and you know, what the Western psychology profession would call healing. I don't love that word because I don't think that we're all broken and, you know, that we all need fixing. But, you know, there is this idea that there's an aspect that's broken off or that we're hiding from ourselves. And if you can release all that energy, then your natural genius, your natural creativity, your natural goodness is released. It's not like, let me say that part this way. You don't really have to train someone to be good. You just have to train them to stop being bad. Or stop being negative. You know what I mean? Because the natural positive energy, the natural source of that is love. And we all have access to that, but we hide it from ourselves or we block it. And it's negative programming. It's negative self, you know, talk. It's negative conditioning. It's the constant distraction and addiction to social media and our iPhones and news. And so you shut all that off. So then there's some more practical things I tell people. Okay, first of all, get your TV out of your house. Or if you keep it in your house, turn off your cable and only use Netflix.
Yep.
And when you watch Netflix, watch the positive stuff.
Yep.
You know, good documentaries and The Crown or whatever, but don't watch, you know, all the shoot 'em up, bang, bang, born stuff all the time. Once in a while, but when you watch it, make sure that you put up a little barrier, not taking that negativity in. Still, it's not good for your psyche. Yep. So get the TV out, shut off news. Don't ever watch network news. If you want to catch up on what's going on, scan Google News. And play opposite day. Every headline, just believe the opposite, right? And so you're going to start getting closer to the truth this way. You're cutting out the negativity, and you're starting to screen all the manipulation that's going on in our cultures. So, and then third is really, you know, if you want to go on a diet with your iPhone or your Android device, right? Learn to shut it off early at night and put it in a drawer, even sell little iPhone beds, put it in bed.
Yeah.
You know, do not wake up and pick that thing up first thing in the morning, right? You pick it up after your morning ritual, maybe even after your workout. Okay. And then set the whole thing aside for one day a week and just spend some time in nature or just spend time without it, right? Retrain yourself to be okay without being constantly, you know, connected to the device. Cause you know, especially with the younger kids, it's hijacked their brains.
Yeah. Yeah.
Completely hijacked it.
Yeah. I've got three boys. One's an adult now, he's 21, but I've got twins that are 15, 16, going on 16 in a couple of months. And, I think one of my biggest concerns as a parent is how to help them, or how I've tried to help them, navigate technology, social media, iPhones, the whole lot, because you can't stop them from using it.
No.
You know, you have to try and equip them with the skills, because I grew up in a generation, as have you, where we lived in a time where social media and technology was a lot less.
That's right.
It was a lot less of an impost on our lives. Now, has the development of that technology brought great things? Absolutely. But it's also brought with it a completely different set of circumstances and issues and problems that we probably never saw coming.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, Mark, one more thing before we wrap this up for you, but how does Mark Devine look after himself? You're born in 64, so you're what, 56, 7 years of age?
I'm 58 right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean,
born in 63, last year the baby boomers. I feel stronger today than I probably did 10 years and even 20 years ago. Mm. I block off most of the morning for my health and longevity practice, right? So I try not to do anything before 10 o'clock a.m. that's business-like.
Right.
Occasionally something creeps in, you know, that's important enough. I'll do it at 9, and rarely earlier than that, unless it's, you know, again, rarely, maybe 2 or 3 times a year, I'll have something that happens earlier than that. So, you know, the majority of the year, probably 350 of the 365 days. And I give myself a little leeway on the weekends, but, you know, I do my training on the weekends as well. So my routine will be, you know, waking up 5:30 or, you know, ish. I don't try not to use alarms. Sometimes I have to. And I'll begin my morning ritual, which includes a practice of breathing, contemplation, looking at my life ethos, practicing my future vision, and then a few, you know, spiritual things, you know, that I do through reading, contemplation, and meditation. And I do that with my wife, which is incredible as a relationship builder. When that's all complete, then we'll have a smoothie, and then we come up to my training center, which is like 7 minutes up the road. And that's where I have my martial arts set up, as well as my functional gym and my podcast studio. It's where I am right now.
Wow.
And so then I'll do a half an hour of physical movement, yoga, you know, asana with my wife, and then we'll do another short meditation. And then we go into our SealFit workout. Mm. So I still do our SealFit workouts 4 times a week. And that includes a pretty robust warm-up. You know, you've heard the saying, our workout is your warm-up, or our warm-up is your workout. Mm-hmm. It's kind of one of those, you know?
Yep, yep.
And then I do strength training. So my strength work is kind of focused on the classic lifts. I do a press, push press one day, deadlift, pull-ups, and bench press. So I used to do weighted squats, but I've come to believe, especially at my age, that it's not great for the spine. And so I don't do heavy weighted squats anymore. And I really, you know, I'll do a lot of air squats and you know, dumbbell kind of like, what do you call those? Whatever.
Goblet squat.
Yeah. Goblet squats and stuff like that. So I don't go heavy on the squats. And then I'll do the, what we call work capacity, which is kind of like a CrossFit workout, but we don't do it for time. You know, if it's 5 rounds, we do 5 rounds. It's not 5 rounds for time. Or an AMRAP, you know, something like that. And I do that with my wife, and we just, you know, break a fantastic sweat, get the metabolic, you know, conditioning going. And then I have a hyperbaric chamber. So if I have time, then I'll do a hyperbaric chamber right after that for 30 to 40 minutes. And it's big enough. My wife and I, sometimes we sit in there, you know, we meditate or we do some reading, or, you know, I'll do some schoolwork. I'm in my PhD program right now, kind of picking up where I left off. You know, short story there. In 2004, I was in a doctorate program in leadership, and I got mobilized to go to war, you know, with the SEALs in Iraq. And over there, I decided I didn't want to finish that. I didn't want to be an academic. I wanted to come back and teach leaders. So I started SealFit after that. Yeah. But it's been nagging me I quit that program. And so I found this program at Pepperdine called the PhD in Global Leadership. And it's like, it's perfect for me. I'm like, this is perfect time. We need global leadership. I am a global leader. And so I wanted to bring kind of the academic stamp of approval, and I'm going to use it to study the effectiveness of our own integrated training. But anyway, so that's my morning ritual. It takes me until 10 a.m. I feel, you know, phenomenal with it. The only supplementation to that is I practice a keto twice a week, semi-private with one other black belt and myself. This will be the third art that I'll be, I'll train for or test for my black belt early next year. It's completely different. I've like had to unlearn everything I learned in karate and kung fu.
Wow.
Aikido is very different. Wow. It's challenging me, big time challenging me. And then I'll do, my wife and I love to go walks on the beach. And I told you, San Diego, as you know, is beautiful. We live on the ocean, so we have stairs down to the beach and we just get down there as much as we can.
Wow. That's amazing. It's amazing to listen to someone that's got such an amazing experience in life, but you're still looking for things. You're still searching for things. You're still developing. You're still growing and learning. Okay. And you're living
never
in,
ends.
No, mate, it doesn't ever end. And you live in San Diego, which is, isn't that the home of where the SEALs train, where they do buds and all that?
That's
sort of
right.
So you're probably walking out along the beach, are you, and just waving in their water and say, good luck with that. Good luck.
I know, right? I used to live in Coronado. That's where I met my wife.
And that's it.
That's where the SEALs train. And so, yeah, we used to walk down the beach and all the team guys running by us. I'm like, yeah, I'm glad I'm not there. But
you might know the actor Daniel Craig. Daniel Craig has played James Bond for the last, 10
years.
He's
awesome.
Yeah. Well, he's giving up that role. You know that, don't you, Mark?
I think I heard something. Why is that? I'm not sure why.
Well, because you're the next James Bond, mate. That's you're a diplomat. You're trained in the military. You've got all the assets, mate. You're the next James Bond.
Let's do it.
Mark Devine. What an amazing podcast. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate that.
Thank you, Russell.
In terms of people connecting with you, following you, using your programs and tapping into your expertise, what's the best way for that to happen for people? Because I know off the back of this podcast, people are going to want to know more about you.
That's very cool. Well, I have my own podcast is Unbeatable Mind. You can search Apple with my name, Mark Devine, or that Unbeatable Mind. It's ranked in the top 10 in the health category.
Wow.
The Unbeatable Mind training is, this website is unbeatablemind.com. That's where we do that. You know, we do have a new program, which is an 8-week kind of agile leader type program we're launching next month. So you'll find information there. But we also have this year-long program, which is just incredible. You can learn more at that website. And a really good starter kit, which is this super effective, like 30-day challenge, is another also good way to kind of get exposed to the training and the box breathing and all that. And that's at unbeatablemind.com/challenge. Mm-hmm. And then for the hardcore athletes who are listening to you, who want, maybe you've heard of SEAL Fit or want to get busy, we do offer, we're going to run two of our Crucible weekends next year. And that's where we have, 6, 12, 24, and 50 hours of our SEAL Fit event training, which is modeled after Navy SEALs Hell Week. It's the hardest training in the world outside the actual Navy SEAL military type training. It's phenomenal training. We call it Kokoro, which means merge heart, mind, and body in action. That can be found all at sealfit.com.
Right.
So those are some good places to start. My podcast, sealfit.com, unbeatablemind.com/challenge. And also, if you want to learn more about my way of thinking, then you mentioned the book Unbeatable Mind. That's a great place to start. That's on Amazon. And I have four other books, but that's a good one to start to learn the philosophy.
Wow. Thank you.
Thank you for letting me share that.
No, mate, my pleasure. Thank you for being on the show. Thank you for giving us your time. And I'll just finish by saying that we need more people like you, true leaders, considered voices, people that have the best interest of the human race at their core. And we need a little less hysteria, a little less craziness, don't we, in this world, and more considered voices. So, Mark Devine, yeah. It's been a pleasure. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Russell. I agree. It's going to take a team.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. I'd appreciate it greatly if you would follow us on Instagram and like us on Facebook, The Australian Fitness Podcast. If you would like to reach out to me for professional services or to know more about my background, visit www.russelljarrett.com.au. And you can also follow me on Instagram at Russell_Jarrett1. If you have any questions or feedback, feel free to email us at info@AustralianFitnessPodcast.com.au. If you have any ideas for guests that you would feel would be valuable to our listeners, let us know. Currently, Australian Fitness Podcast doesn't have a sponsor. If you think your product or service would be a good match for the show, reach out to us. Thanks, and we'll see you soon.